Ladies and gentlemen, today is the first day of the rest of your life. And now, listen in as Kristen and Johnny bring it all to the table on the Vision Board Podcast.
All right, guys, welcome back. Episode 180 of the Vision Board Podcast. I'm Tristan Cannell, and alongside me, Johnny Stofko.
As always, Tristan, TK, good to be here. Episode 180, we're excited to drop this one.
Yeah, it's going to be a really exciting one. We've got Mark Devine on the show, and Mark just ticks so many boxes in terms of what he's achieved in life. I was having a look at his profile, and you think all the education we got early in his life, then he became a Navy SEAL. Today, obviously, a number of different organizations, which is own businesses, and they're all flourishing, which is just great, man.
This man's going to be 55 years old this year, and he's lived a life of probably four or five 55-year-olds. Like you said, went to Colgate University, has an MBA from NYU.
NYU, yeah.
He's a Navy SEAL, and his business and his brand, and more of a movement, SEAL Fit, and his show, Unbreakable Mind?
Yeah, Unbreakable Mind. It's kind of similar to what Vision, but we've had a lot of cross guests. And I first heard of him, as I mentioned to you, through Joe DeFranco. And then I looked him up, and yeah, what he was doing was kind of similar paths. And I really enjoyed sort of, because I haven't explored that sort of mindfulness yet, and getting that perspective.
You tried. I got you in the tank a few times.
Nah.
Scary moments. You know what, Tristan, though? I think it comes down to, and speaking from you, about you haven't practiced that yet. I think just getting started with that way of thinking is the start. And then, you know, you're already thinking. So you actually are. And, like, years looking back down the road, you'll be like, yeah, I started there.
I think it's those little stones. That's what I like to do. Like, I think I've become a lot better with, like, gratitude over the last 2 months. Kind of my step forward to then figuring out what's next after gratitude. Mm. It's a gratitude practice. And then what?
Yep.
Do you know what I mean? Now,
you only have those answers.
By having conversations with people with experience in that sort of situation, I feel that will kind of open my mind into what I want to explore next.
And it's so important to have something intrinsically to work on for ourselves. Like you mentioned gratitude, the one I'm working on currently is abundance. Mm. The abundance mindset,
yeah,
strictly related to that I deserve better, not necessarily objects or having a lot of things, but that understanding that, you know, I can achieve and, you know, possibly even come close to, you know, being great. Like treating people great, being a good person, you know, that sort of thing.
I think it's the simple things that you can control.
Yeah, and then you know, you say, what's next? That's the beautiful part about wanting to develop, because we don't have those answers.
Like, yeah, we don't know.
You hit gratitude, and then what? And it's almost like,
it's infinity, man, I guess. Yeah. So that's probably what makes life interesting, the fact that we can continue to explore and try to find things.
Get advice from guys like this.
Yeah.
Like Mark, I think I said, I was on last night before I went to bed, I was on some message board. And it's almost like starting a podcast, because I hear some people say, oh, don't start a podcast or don't do that because whatever reasons. I'm the opposite. I think it could cover as a master's degree course, where we have conversations with people as like to develop. And through the answers they give us, they're only giving us that feedback because we ask for it.
It's true.
And then it's like, what's our show called? The Vision Board. You must have a vision. It doesn't have to be a clear one, but an understanding of what you want to achieve, and then you have to ask for it.
Yeah.
And have guys like this, and he's older, he's been through it. It's very valuable. These conversations are very valuable.
Yeah, couldn't agree more, man. All right, guys, before we get Mark on the show, just a big shout out. Thank you for tuning in today. Also, if you haven't yet, please subscribe to the show via iTunes, SoundCloud, Stitcher, or you can find all the episodes, all the show notes on the website, www.thevisionboardpodcast.com. What's really valuable, if you're a long-time listener and you haven't done this yet, please, if you can, log on to iTunes and leave us a 5-star review. Just helps us get seen by more people, and that means that our great guests like Mark will just be able to spread their positivity and their stories to more people.
For sure, and as the podcasting industry in Australia is getting more popular, it puts us in these categories, and, you know, you guys tell your friends about us, we appreciate you. So, you know, we've gone on 2 years. This is pretty much almost to the date of when we launched this thing. So it's all because you guys keep tuning in that TK and I keep wanting to push this. So thank you.
For sure. All right, guys. I'm really excited to bring you this episode, and I introduce Mark Devine. It makes me wanna creep. I got something for your mind, your body, and your soul. I got something for your mind, your body, and your soul. All right, right, guys, our special guest is Mark Devine. Mark is an expert in human performance and is also the founder and leader of several highly successful enterprises, including SEALFIT, The Unbeatable Mind, NavySeals.com, US CrossFit, just to name a few. He's a New York Times bestselling author, and he also hosts the hit podcast, Unbeatable Mind. We welcome Mark Devine.
Awesome. Thanks, guys. Yep. Thanks for having me on the show.
Excellent. Mark, man, thanks for sharing the space with us. You know, before, I want to open up the Unbeatable Mind, but let's start with SEALFIT and maybe share with our listeners and fans who don't know what SEALFIT is, what your intentions are with that and who's it for.
Yeah, you know, I have to start off by saying we have had a ton of Aussies come up and do our training.
Yeah.
And really interesting to me that there's such a huge interest or awareness of SEALFIT down in Australia, which shows me how, you know, Australia is filled with a bunch of tough people. I've always known that, and the Aussies who come up do a really good job and crush the training, so that's really cool. But SEALFIT, I designed SEALFIT back in 2006, and so how it got started is when I launched NavySeals.com, one of the things I had on there was a forum, and this is kind of like everything about SEALs, spec ops, but I also sold gear. You know, I was one of the first people to sell that kind of gear until Amazon sold it for me, you know, cheaper than I could ever. And we still sell gear, but I also started to train people in physical and mental toughness. Mm. And we had these forums, and we had spontaneous training groups start up for guys who wanted to be SEALs. And I wasn't really looking at it as a business at the time, but because of that experience, I ended up leveraging that into a government contract to set up a nationwide mentoring program for Navy SEAL candidates. That program is still going on today, even though I got bumped off the contract by this billion-dollar company named Blackwater. Oh, that's a whole nother story.
Yeah. Jesus.
total fraud, too. They totally stole it from me. But it was a blessing in disguise, like most things are, right? There's always a silver lining. And so the silver lining to that was said, you know, screw it. I'm not going to do government contracting. I have no business being in those waters. You know, there's some big sharks playing. I just got my ass handed to me. I want to have thousands of clients, people who are passionate about training themselves, really want to do it, as opposed to one client who's, you know, dictating my every move and not letting me be innovative. So I shifted focus. I gave up the government contracting business, literally turned and walked away from it after that. And I launched SEALFIT like about 9 months later. So SEALFIT initially was to train SEAL and other spec ops candidates so that they could just dominate in their training pipelines. And I did that with a combination of this physical training model I developed, which develops strength, stamina, work capacity, endurance, and durability, and in a very specific way. It's definitely a hybrid training program. And when we launched it, it was very unique. These days, you know, there's a lot of programs kind of like it, right? A lot of people have imitated or innovated. And so it's not as unusual today, 10 years later. But when we came out, it was pretty innovative and it's extremely effective. And then I also developed a mental, emotional kind of warrior spirit training model that I called Unbeatable Mind, which ended up being spun out to its own company now. But I developed those through these 30-day immersion academies that I ran. So the training was, here, you can do this on your own, or if you really want full benefit, come to work with me in California. I had a training center in Encinitas, California. And this is where our very first one, I had an Australian guy who was trying to get into the Australian SES come up. What a great guy. His name is Jamie. I wish I could remember his last name right now.
Yes.
He came to the program twice. But anyways, so I'm a lifetime martial artist, and I've always been very inspired by kind of the warrior monk approach of like the monastery, you know, like the Shaolin monastery. You go and you live and you train for like 15 hours a day. And you can imagine what happens after months of doing this, right? It's a total transformation. So I was like, well, how about an American, like, Shaolin monastery? I called it SEALFIT. Guys would come and live with me for 30 days straight at my training center. We trained from 6 in the morning until, like, 8 or 9 at night, sometimes around the clock.
Wow.
And the double-edged cool part about this is not only was this extremely effective training, but it provided me a laboratory to really innovate different training ideas and models. So out of that came, you know, the SEALFIT operator workouts, the entire crucible training model of SEALFIT, which we call Kokoro Camp now, which is, you know, got a worldwide reputation. The Unbeatable Mind program, my a yoga program for warriors I call Kokoro Yoga. Kokoro means heart-mind. And also our team training, so the way we train now sports teams, like working with the Philadelphia Flyers and, you know, with other teams, that all came out of that experience.
Yeah.
It was wickedly cool. Now, unfortunately, you know, the city kind of came down on us after about 6 years because we were running sort of a rogue business. You can imagine, right in the middle of this town where we weren't permitted to do about half the things that we were doing. And we were confusing the shit out of the people because, you know, we had all these warriors living in this apartment at our training center. We weren't, like, that place wasn't really certified to do that. We were having people, you know, run down the street with carrying logs and every other heavy objects and doing buddy carries.
People thought they were,
yeah, people thought, you know, we were like hurting people because we'd be carrying people down the streets on our backs, and like they'd call the ambulance and stuff like this. We were confusing people because they didn't really get it, you know. And so there were some complaints, and the city came down on us. So we had to move that out. Now I can't do those long academies anymore, but we do offer still some short versions of that. Yeah. So that's SEALFIT. SEALFIT is, in a nutshell, it's training for the warrior athlete.
Yep.
Or any athlete. It's very hard. It's performance training. How do I dominate, you know, whether I'm a SEAL or an SAS guy, to get through my pipeline training? How do I dominate in combat? And win, you know, for my team. If I'm an athlete, you know, then how do I use these skills to win in my, you know, on my battlefield, which is more the playing field. So that's what we do with SEALFIT.
Yeah.
To answer specifically your question, it was a long and circuitous answer, but I'm prone to do that at times.
Very good, Mark. Just with SEALFIT, you know, you spoke about that team environment. You know, when you left the SEALs, did you need that, like, to stay within that team environment?
You know, I left the SEALs active duty in 96, but I stayed in the reserve. So I was a SEAL for 20 years total, but yeah. 10 of it was active duty
yep.
when I was really in the fight, and 10 was a reservist. So as a reservist, I was able to have more of a normal life. That's when I got into the entrepreneurship.
Yep.
My first business was a brewery. You know, here I am, a young SEAL just getting off active duty as a senior lieutenant, and I'm thinking, you know, beer. Like, beer is really good. So why don't I just start a brewery, you know, and have free beer for life? Well,
sounds like a great idea.
Microbrews.
Yeah, microbrews huge up here. And we were the third one in San Diego. Now there's like over 100. Yeah. We're the third one. Business is really successful to this day. I'm not involved anymore because my team were my brother-in-laws. My brother-in-laws were not like me. You know, yeah. They weren't like my SEAL teammates. They're very little trusted. The whole partnership blew up after about 3 years. And I was like, to your point, I was like, oh my God, you know, how valuable was my team that I had in my SEAL days, and how much I took that for granted.
Yeah.
And now I'm like, oh my God, how do I get back to that? How do I create that in my organization? And also, how do I teach people to have that? Both have the mental toughness, the resiliency, the attitude, the winning attitude, but also the team around you that has those same qualities is incredibly valuable and very rare. And so that's one of the reasons why I committed my life to training this stuff, because it was had such a powerful impact on me. And I had a unique ability to distill the lessons, you know, not just from the SEALs, but from my other experiences, including the martial arts and
yep.
things like yoga and stuff, and put it together into this kind of integrated training program.
They say the samurai was the most lethal and efficient warrior, and they had a saying. They used to say the phrase of the samurai was Dantatsu, and they wouldn't have armor on their back because Dantatsu is all about the mindset of we're never turning our back, we're always going forward. So they only had their armor on their front and their back was exposed. That sort of mindset with SEALFIT and, you know, what you're putting on to the people who take part in your course, is that talk about maybe the difficulties of instilling that in almost like a hive mentality, or, you know, what are the struggles with getting that point across and being a very important asset of development, that warrior mindset?
Yeah, it's so critical. And, you know, when you're in the SEAL or special ops, there's so much, like I said, that's it's easy to take for granted. We have this concept we call the three spheres. The three spheres are the individual, I, you know, like me as a an individual, as a leader, how I think, my emotional control, the story I tell myself, my worldview, my ability to interact and relate to other people. That's all just within me. It's my subjective experience. And then there's this we, like the three of us are having a subjective experience. The listeners are all having an experience. So you can look at all of us right now who are listening to this as a we, as a tribe who've come together for this experience. And these words and what your questions are influencing people's internal subjective experience, which is now collective, right? So that's the collective subjective. And then there's the it. The it is the objective. And that is the systems and structures that we operate in. So let me apply this to the SEALs. When I went into the SEALs, the system and structure of both the training and how the SEALs are organized, you know, the different values that we were, had to stand up for, like ready to lead, ready to follow, never quit. If you didn't live those values, you didn't even make it through the training, right? And so both the collective subjective experience, the ethos of the SEALs, the attitude of the SEALs, as well as the systemic rules of engagement that drove that behavior and led to the selection of other like-minded individuals meant that by the time my team was formed and we were going to combat, like I had 14 dudes, and now they're letting women in, but none of them made it through training. But back then it was all men. I had 14 guys or 13 guys who I knew beyond a shadow of a doubt could think like me, could act like me, could just destroy the enemy like me. They all had my back like the samurai. I didn't have to wonder whether they were going to, you know, they're going to win the mission with me. And so together, there's like this multiplier effect. Those 14 guys, because we were all in total synchronization, all one in our minds and all had the physical and mental preparation to dominate, you know, we could just accomplish practically anything. And so the SEALs had this attitude that, you know, any task, any mission, bring it on. No task too big. We'll do it. We'll get it done. That's like 90% of that was created over the years by the SEALs themselves. And the individual operator like me, all they had to do was go plug into that, be good enough to get through the training, and then the stream carried me. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
How do you, as an entrepreneur or a business leader, how do you build this? How do you first get those skills, and how do you build it in your team? This is the essence of what I teach, and it's not easy. It's not easy because you've got to take a look at all three of those, but then it always comes back to starting with the self and modeling the behavior, right? You've got to learn how to win in your mind before you step foot in the battlefield. You've got to learn how to develop yourself along what I call the five mountains, which is physical mastery. You guys know a lot about that. Just learning how to control your physiology, learning how to breathe well, learning how to move functionally, you know, getting really confident with your body, right? Mm. Strong, durable, you know, you don't have to be the best athlete. You don't have to, you know, even be an athlete. You don't even have to consider yourself an athlete. Like a lot of SEALs come off the farm or from the inner city. They're like, you know, they're not athletic in the sense that you think, but you get them into that domain and they're freaking great warrior athletes or industrial athletes. You know what I mean? And so, because they take care of their body and they train it every day. And then physical, and then the mental component is, how do you develop mental control so that you can make really good decisions under pressure? How do you focus? How do you concentrate? How do you expand your awareness? All of that has to be trained. And then the emotional, this is one that trips up a lot of guys, especially in the regular world, because the risk is not as high as a SEAL. So they're not required to develop that emotional depth and control that the warrior is. And so they often leave it and don't touch it because it's sticky and it's challenging. Emotional development is the hardest one to develop. And then there's that warrior spirit, that non-quitting spirit. We call that Kokoro, heart-mind. And then the intuitive aspect of, you know, learning to trust your gut and use your intuition as part of your decision process. Those are the five mountains. And so, you know, in a sense, you got to start there to open yourself up to your own potential, to start evolving yourself. Then you bring that into your team, first by leading by example and modeling, then by slowly training your team these techniques, or recruiting people who are willing and able to train these types of techniques. And then you start to look at the organization or that third sphere, that it sphere, and say, okay, what can I do? Like I showed you a picture of my gym. We have a gym. We have a yoga studio. We practice what we preach here at my office so that, you know, at any point in the day, you can see someone kind of banging around some weights or doing some box breathing or, you know, in the morning doing their yoga practice. And it's all part of this development of providing the structure and the space and also rewarding people for doing that kind of work. So for most organizations, you know, there's just focus on, you know, you sit at a desk in your computer and you do some sort of task or project, and there's no real care and concern about the development of the individual. And what I'm teaching people is that's, you're leaving so much on the table because, or off the table, because if you could, in your organization, let your organization be a developmental tool so that your main resource, your main asset is the people who've committed to achieving the mission with you. Yeah. Every day that they come to work, they're evolving themselves, and hence they're evolving the team and the organization to be able to dominate, just like the SEALs did. Mm. That's a pretty broad-based look at kind of what I try to teach from my training. Yeah. None beetle of mine.
Has the corporate side of things, have they bought into that system? What you said is just pretty powerful, especially with efficiency in the workplace. How have you gone on kind of the corporate side of things?
Well, that's coming in 2018 as a formalized program. So far, it's something that I've spoken about, you know, in my speech. You know, I've been asked to do a lot of keynote speeches and stuff over the last 2 years. And to be fair, I wanted to really prove it in my own organization before I went out and did it too much or taught it too much. So it's been pretty opportunistic. I mean, I've worked with a few organizations, like a hospital and a couple of startups and stuff, but I don't really personally have the time to go out and consult like that. And so what I needed to do first was develop a training program to certify other Unbeatable Mind coaches who could then go out and do it. And we've got our first group of 20 coaches who will be finishing up in June of next year, of 2018, who will be certified to launch this, you know, the full version of the training program. Up until now, we launched the Unbeatable Mind, spun it out. We launched that in 2012. Up until now, it's just focused on the I sphere. It's a very advanced personal development program.
Okay.
But starting next year, it's going to cover team and organizations as well.
And Mark, what are you using to kind of measure the results of your course, the results of your program, the results of your teaching? Once a student finishes the course, is there follow-up? Is there accountability? Do you guys become part of like a fraternity? Could you explain that process?
Excellent question. There is the tribal aspect, and so the tribe does hold each other accountable. We organize people into boat crews and also swim buddies, just like in the SEALs. So everyone's got a boat crew. The boat crews, you know, hold each other accountable and have, you know, like weekly calls and stuff. And this is, you know, mostly through our the people who go all in, you know, through our coaching program and whatnot. But even in the general community of people who just are doing our online course, there's, you know, there's peer accountability in our online platform and whatnot. Now, we, for those who we actually can reach out and touch, we offer a series of assessments. So we'll do a physical baseline at the beginning of the year and another physical baseline at the end of the year. And, we can demonstrate, obviously, that they'll improve their physical readiness. We do essentially something called the leadership. There's a leadership test put together by a company called Lectica, and I think the actual acronym is escaping me, but this is a test that will evaluate your the complexity of your decision making. So let me back up a little bit. The training, our training is what I call a vertical development program. Most training, whether it's leadership or skill development, is horizontal development. Meaning you don't change as a person as a result of training. You just get some more skills.
Yeah.
Now, if you work with those skills really deeply over 10 years, it'll help evolve you, kind of the wax on, wax off process, you know, or Gladwell's 10,000 hours. Yep. But our training, because of the integrated nature where you're actually working, you know, in a deep immersive way with your, you know, physically and mentally and emotionally and intuitionally and your that kokoro, throwing your heart into it kind of thing, it tends to unlock vertical development, which means changing who you are, how you see the world, your own self-concept, your own self-story. And some different disciplines that map out certain kind of levels or stages of development that humans go through. The three most common or basic are egocentric, ethnocentric, and world-centric. Our training will take you through ego to through ego-ethnic and to world-centric with several years of dedicated work. And to be fair, very few individuals worldwide are at a world-centric level. And no organized cultures that I know of in terms of like governmental structures or countries are at the world-centric level. There are pockets of people here and there. It's going to become more common, especially with your generation, because I think your generation is coming in, being able to connect to the world immediately with the internet and iPhones and blockchain, whereas, you know, that to me wasn't available until I was in my 40s. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
And so it's going to be more common. And so we're the first vertical development leadership program that I'm aware of when you look at it in the full program, like I told you about, where you're evolving the self, the team, and the organization up to stages of what I call world-centric leadership. The measurement of that is difficult because there is no single test to measure consciousness, right? To say, yeah, I was at this level of consciousness, now I'm at this level of consciousness, or awareness would be another term, or complexity of decision-making. So we want to use a physical tool to measure your body. That's pretty easy. So we do body comp analysis and physical skills based upon just body weight training. And then we do, you could do an IQ test, but we're not so much trying to affect IQ because most people's IQs are pretty good anyways. So we look at this leadership complexity. How are you able to take perspectives on other people and create new win-win-win scenarios that you didn't have before, the capacity to develop before? That's one outcome that we look at. And then we also have people do the an EQ test, emotional quotient. And generally speaking, with a year of dedicated training, we see dramatic improvement in all three of those categories. You know, down the road, I'd love to see a unified, integrated test, but I'm not sure how to develop that yet.
Hey, Mark, with the way that your business and the way you teach people has evolved, and you've evolved with time, you know, early on in your life, you did your MBA, you did your CPA, so you did kind of traditional educational route as well, and then obviously you went to the SEALs and you learned another style of learning. And then, as I've just said, it's kind of evolved as well. You know, you've got an 18-year-old son. In terms of the kind of conversations you have with him about education, about maybe going to college and things like that, has that changed in terms of when you were the same age as your son?
For sure, yeah. I mean, I think that there was a traditional path that most people in America look to, is like graduate from high school, then go to a four-year liberal arts college. And that was what was kind of laid out for me. I didn't question it. I went to a good college. And I went to my master's degree, you mentioned that, NYU Stern School of Business. I can honestly tell you I didn't learn jack shit at my college academically or my MBA. My MBA was rather useless. There was no entrepreneurship in there, no leadership in there, the two things that I needed. It was valuable time, though, for me, especially socially and physically, mentally, emotionally, because of my my access to the sports at college. You know, I was a competitive swimmer and a rower, and a coach in the form of my swim coach, who was really early in the game of sports psychology and visualization, and my fraternity, right, where I learned how to, like, really good social skills.
Exactly, yeah.
The experience was terrific. I just didn't learn much from the academics. Now, if we could have a model that was, you know, where it'd be much more, you know, apply that with a trade school, more foreign, you know, I probably learned the most when I went overseas, you know, foreign overseas type study. Anyways, back to your question. So that was my experience, and that's still kind of the norm preached model in America, although it was changing rapidly. So with our son, now my son's a different kind of learner to begin with, right? He's not a straight linear path, you know, A, B student like I was. He's much more of a creative guy, and he struggled with the traditional school approach. And so, you know, he wanted to go to public school. We didn't send him to some special school. He wanted to go to public school for the socialization and the other things. So we let him do that.
Yeah.
Now, when he graduated, he literally came to us. He got into a school up in San Francisco, but he came to us and said, "Mom, Dad, I don't think I'm ready to go. I don't want to go to that city yet. I don't, you know, I'm not ready for that." So we said, "Okay, how about a gap year?" So he's taken a gap year. And with this gap year, he's learning, he loves cars. So he's learning how to tear apart cars and rebuild them. And, you know, he's getting a really cool hands-on kind of hybrid little education there. And he's going to start taking classes, creative classes. Now, I'm really excited for him for this because he's really going to develop that right brain. He's taking art. Starting in January, he's going to take art, music, Photoshop, you know, stuff like that. Things that will then come be valuable later if he gets into like designing futuristic automobiles or whatever, however that all come together.
Never know.
So yeah. We're not pushing him to do, hey, I have also said, you know, I don't think you need another math class or English class. Like, I certainly didn't need to take math and English in college. I mean, I freaking knew how to speak English. It's insane that you'd have to take another whole year of math and English in college. You know, it just doesn't make any sense.
Yeah. Mark, I ended up getting involved with I did a post-grad in leadership and personal development with this school out of actually Las Vegas, Nevada. And
nice.
So one of the most difficult processes, they call them processes, that I had to do was you're standing in a crowded room, you know, you're in your team, and your teacher walks in and they say, Mr. Devine, I work for the California Lottery. You just won $50 million. Stand up in front of your class and show us your emotions. So I watched grown adults, people panic in that scenario. And you get through it, though, and then you're changed. And now, you know, the development course is over a year and a half full of those sort of things. So I just gave you an example of one. Could you share one with us? Maybe something that the listener, if they would get enrolled into your course, what they would expect, something similar to get them out of their comfort zone?
Well, we have a lot of them. And one of them, I'll tie it to the physical, right? So one of my concepts is that change requires challenge. You got to challenge yourself. Mm-hmm. And you got to do things that scare the shit out of you. So we, through our SEAL Fit model, we have certain events that are pretty scary, but they're eminently doable if you prepare your body and mind appropriately. So, and we have different levels, right? So some people are like, I'm not ready for that one, but I can do that one. Yeah. And so what these are called crucibles. The crucible is truly a total immersion experience that completely shatters your sense of reality and who you are. One of our crucible events is 50 hours of nonstop physical and mental training and emotional training, no sleep, around the clock. And you're put in a boat crew and you've got a swim buddy and you're forced to not just be, you know, hunker down, I can get through this, but you're forced to do things where you have to support your team, you have to support your teammate. You end up experiencing like super extended long flow states that last for hours and hours. And that's usually on day two into day three, because of the combination of sleep deprivation and nonstop, you know, doing of fairly simple tasks. Because by that time, you know, we're not asking them to solve advanced quadratic equations because they haven't been asleep for 36 hours. But we're asking them to, like, okay, pick up this log with your team and walk 3 miles. You know what I mean? And then you have to work with your team to communicate, to shift shoulders every now and then, or do the stupid little tasks that my SEAL Fit coaches ask them to do. It's a profound experience. Now, like I said, not everyone's ready for 50, but guess what? We have a 12-hour version and a 6-hour version. Anybody can do those. That's one example, and we can't require someone to do that, but everyone does it because the culture is like, okay, I'm getting ready to do my first 20X, and we call the 20X, that means 20 times potential. You're going to tap into 20 times potential. The other experience is we do a lot of work with the breath. So one mind-boggling experience for people we call the breath empowerment exercise, and that's an hour of intense breathing. It's sort of based upon holotropic breath work, but it's our own version of it. And you do an hour of intense breathing where it's kind of, if you can imagine an hour of Wim Hof, it's like that.
Okay.
Except we break it into 3 sets, and we have an extended breath hold at the end of each set. And sometimes you can hold your breath for like 5 or 6 minutes, and you even achieve, like I've done it like 60 or 70 times, I often achieve what's called the breathless state, where you got so much oxygen in your body, and you just stop breathing.
Is it retentive breathing?
The breath itself, when you're practicing, is just deep inhale through the nose.
And light out.
And a light exhale, but you just keep going.
Yep.
And so it's like a workout. You just keep going. And you have all this resistance they have to push through because you're just laying on the floor and just breathing your ass off for 45 minutes. But like I said, we have 3 breaks where we do this extended breath hold. It's like, and then you just relax into that breath hold. Now, this experience is profound. Like, major emotional releases, major spiritual experiences happening. People come out of that with, you know, releasing stuff that they've held on to for years and just like, my God, holy shit. Learning things about themselves that they you know, didn't know before, are experiencing sometimes for the first time this notion that there's more to life than what was before their eyes. And so they come out with a deep connection to something higher, you know, some their concept of what God might be or a higher power. That's another example. So you note that, you know, our exercises tend to be, you know, the way we like to train is very much of an integrated experience. We want to get the body engaged because we believe that's how you learn best, when your body and mind are engaged in an activity. We also do a lot of our movement training. So that exercise was movement, but it was just moving the breath. So we also do a lot of movement training. We have them called spot drills, where we combine breath movement and visualization. And so we have people do some movement and breathe deeply and then visualize themselves as being like a victorious warrior standing on a hilltop. You know, all their obstacles or their quote-unquote enemies are just slain down the valley. Stuff like that. We have people visualize their future until they get such a clear view of their future in their mind's eye. That's one of the outcomes of what I call winning in your mind, is getting very, very clear about what your future destiny looks like and then just beginning to design toward that, you know, which is not uncommon. Probably in your lexicon, especially with the name of your podcast, is developing a vision for the future and then architecting your destiny as opposed to having it happen to you. So we do those types of exercises as well. My favorite are the ones that really take you out of your comfort zone. Mm. And when through that process, not only do you gain new insights about yourself, but you develop some serious resiliency, right? An ability to focus and confidence, because that's a huge thing. A lot of people just don't feel confident. But if we can get them into a situation which, you know, they're cold, wet, and miserable, and yet they're having a blast and they're crushing it, then they're like, I don't know what I was worried about. You know, yeah. It's kind of like your exercise. You, being public speaking gets easy once you realize there's really nothing to worry about except your own fear of it.
Yeah.
So just set this stupid fear aside and just go do it, and maybe just speak to one person in the audience to get started. You know, just have a one-on-one relationship. Everyone else will feel like they're having that same one-on-one relationship. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Get out of your own head and get out there and experience that which you're afraid of.
Have you read that Harvard study on the levels of happiness?
No. So but I think I need to read it.
Well, they did this. And you just mentioned it. You just triggered my memory by when you said that these people are cold, wet, and tired, and they're having a blast. Harvard studied that. And they were saying that I think they came up with five levels, and the highest level of happiness always and must contain suffering. And the example that they use is you never look back. Yeah, you never look back and tell your friends, man, that roller coaster, that amusement park we went on, that was amazing. It's like, you remember when we climbed that mountain and almost died? That was amazing. So it's like adding that element is super important for, you know, both happiness and fulfillment. It's very important. Mm.
That's pretty interesting. Yeah, I believe that. I mean, what we're saying there, essentially, that all spiritual traditions at their root say that life is suffering. And so if you stay focused just on the outer material, you're just going to perpetuate the suffering.
Yeah.
So to turn within and to begin to connect to some higher power, and then the cause of suffering, the causes of suffering doesn't go away, but your relationship to it goes away. And so then you begin to what we call embrace the suck of that, to find the learning and the lessons and the beauty and joy that comes from learning to be non-reactionary to suffering. It's always going to come. You know, there's always going to be someone in your life that passes away. We are all going to pass away on our own. There's always going to be suffering. So to learn how to deal with that suffering is really the root of what resiliency is all about. So resiliency means, can I bounce back up and learn from my setbacks, or do I just, you know, get trampled and be a victim? You know, resilient people bounce back up with a smile on their face and say, thank you, sir. May I have another, but let me do some preparation first.
Sure. What's up, guys? Be sure to pick up your free copy of Conversations with Champions. This is our free ebook, which is comprised of inspirational quotes from past guests that we've had on the show.
Get inspirational quotes from champions such as Evander Holyfield, Jonathan Thurston, Grant Cardone, Gary Vee, Larry Holmes, Mario Andretti, Anthony Mundine, Joe DeFranco, and many, many more.
To pick up your free copy now, just simply go to our website, www.divisionboardpodcast.com/ebook. Put your name and email in the slot. It takes about 10 seconds, and we'll send you the book directly to your inbox. Now back to the show.
Hey, Mark, just sticking with happiness and, you know, you being a mentor, a teacher, a coach, what gives you the most happiness? Is it the change when they walk in the door and then the end result, or is it the teamwork and the bond that they have that they'll have for the rest of their life?
And both of those, doing the work is great and the team bond is great, but I would say, you know, there's a few elements to our program which are really key. One is the tools, using the tools, and that we've been discussing that, using the tools of daily five mountain training to evolve yourself. That's one. The challenge is another one, right? That challenge locks in your development and accelerates you to the next level. The third is what I call front sight focus planning. This is where we really get clear about where we're going in our life and what strategies and tactics and targets we're going to select to go after it. So this is like getting really, really focused on the tactical day-to-day plan that's going to allow us to really, really kick ass and take names. But all of that is underpinned by probably the most important principle that we work on, which is what I call developing a personal ethos. This is the one that brings the most joy to people, because what we say with developing a personal ethos is, here's a practice and a process to get super clear about your why. Why are you on this planet? Why, you know, why do you do what you do? Figure that out. Then every day, wake up, remind, first thing we do is a morning routine where we remind ourselves of our why, and we connect our actions for today to that why. And we connect our actions today to our, you know, that front sight focused vision for where we're going to go 18 months to 3 years to, you know, to our full on life vision. So the ethos, to me, that's one of the most important things, because then the confusion about whether you're doing the right thing or on the right path, or whether this job is right for you, or I'm hanging out with the right people, all that goes away. And you're able to make those decisions from a place of depth, deep wisdom inside of you, where like you just know now that you're on the right path because you've chosen this path. It's connected to your, you know, your sense of purpose and why you do things. And so you know where you stand on things. You stand your ground. You're not going to be pushed around. You're just deeply confident about who you are and what you're going to do in the world and why you're doing it. So that's the most important thing, I think. Like Simon Sinek says, it all starts with why. If you can figure out the why, happiness follows. Yeah. Everything else is just, you know, just a small obstacle along the way while you fulfill that why.
When I think of the Navy SEALs, I think of, you know, tactical. I think of, they make me feel safe, precise, you know, very a uniformed approach to get to accomplishing a task. Having spoken with you for almost an hour, a word I've written down is corporal. You bring up heart and mind. You seem very, very spiritual. We talk about, you know, getting in tune with our intrinsic happiness. Is this, I guess the question is there something that would surprise the average person listening about the Navy SEALs that we don't know about that brotherhood? Or is that something, that you've practiced, that you've helped develop? And if there is something that would surprise the listener about the Navy SEALs when it comes to that, what is it?
I would say that the SEALs are surprising in a sense, but let me back up. I've been training these techniques to Navy SEALs since 2007. And so there are several hundred, if not more, SEALs who really understand what we just talked about, understand Kokoro heart, and are in some way practicing, you know, to be a world-centric warrior. It's important. It's probably still a percentage, though. You know, SEALs are maybe 2,000 active duty at any one time, so it's just a small percentage. But over time, that's going to grow. They come in all shapes and sizes, and we have the pipe hitters who are just want to go play whack-a-mole, you know, who are tough as nails, right? But are fairly simple guys, right? That they just want to, like I said, go bring it to the ISIS or bring it to the bad guy. And then we have deeply spiritual SEALs who are, you know, just like classic warrior monks, you know, that spend all their time meditating and reading Sun Tzu and practicing their craft, you know. And then we have everything in between. Having said that, what I would say would surprise most people about SEALs is they're not the young ones who get out of training can be a little cocky, but that's beat out of them really, really quickly, both from the op tempo, from the mission, from the team and the organization. But it's a sense of humility. You meet SEALs and you'd be like, you'd never think you could be sitting next to a SEAL in church and not know. 99% of the SEALs have just this deep sense of humility, because that's what happens with that type of training. You get kicked in the ball so many times, and after a while, everything is just like just another suck fest.
Yeah.
And you develop a great sense of humor about yourself. You don't take yourself too seriously. You find beauty in simple things, you know, like just going out for a walk or hanging out with your kid because you don't get to see him very often, or, you know, just life just becomes really precious. And humility is a real unique, I think, attribute that most people find surprising about SEALs.
Yeah. Before you joined the SEALs, Mark, were you quite mindful? Did you do any practices before actually?
Yeah, it's a great question. I think I talk about this in my book, The Way of the SEAL, but one of the reasons I joined the SEALs and did so well in the training, because I was honor man in my class, number one graduate, was because I started a practice of Zen training right when I moved to New York. So I graduated from college in 85, Colgate University. I went right down to NYU and started my job with Coopers & Lybrand, and they were the ones that led me down there. And so for 4 years I was there getting my MBA, CPA, but I started a martial arts program literally within months of me moving to New York, because I really was looking for something that was sort of like a sport but could keep me focused but more flexible. And I just happened to stumble across an incredible martial arts school right down the road from me, and the founder of the entire style, that was his home base. It was headquarters, and he had places around the world. And he became my first real mentor. Actually, second. My first one was my swim coach. But, wow, what a guy. Now, so he is a Zen master who also taught martial arts. So he taught me Zen, and I would meditate on Thursday nights for an hour with him and a small group of other senior students. And I would go twice a year to the Zen Mountain Monastery in Woodstock, New York, and practice Zen and the martial arts. And, you know, for a 21-year-old guy, 21 to 24-year-old guy whose brain was still evolving, you know, the neuroplastic effect of that was extraordinary. Mm. So that's what led me to really open up my own mind, to be able to tap into my own intuition and my own, you know, perceiving mind, and to use my – also to develop my imaging mind in ways that never would have happened if I hadn't practiced Zen. That led me to start to ask better questions and to start to imagine my own future. And that's what led me into the SEALs. And then when I was in the SEALs, those same tools I used for performance. So it was a super cool experience, because I realized not only can these tools of breath, meditation, and visualization be used to create a new destiny, a new future. It led me from being a CPA. Everything was going well. Everyone thought I was a rock star, but it just didn't feel right. But it wasn't until I sat down on the bench that I noticed that it didn't feel right. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So not only can those tools help you develop your potential and change your future, but also when the pressure's on, they help you stay focused and mindful and present and authentic and trustworthy, you know, and make good decisions in the moment of crisis or the moment of pressure. Wow. That was a huge insight. And so, you know, I thought about that for years and years and years. And then when I started teaching the SEALs through SEALFIT, you know, I came back to those themes and said, okay, how do I go back and pull all these tools plus what I learned in the SEALs and use them to develop your potential and to perform better under pressure? And SEALFIT really is about the performance. Unbeatable Mind is about the potential. My book, The Way of the SEAL, is about performance as a leader. My book, Unbeatable Mind, is about how do you develop your total potential as a human being. It's interesting how those themes came, you know, threaded throughout.
They all work out. A little while back, we sat down with a spiritual teacher, and I asked him, why do the monks devote their whole physical incarnation in this existence to meditation? And his answer told me, he said, because they're preparing for their transition. They're preparing for this current body, when it decays and withers away, their transition into the next life. That silence is their meditation. Your body of work now, do you look at this as your preparing for your transition, everything flowing through you, you teaching, you helping people?
Yeah, I would say that another way to look at that, if you believe in the Eastern spiritual traditions, is the law of karma, is that we have a karmic energy that we come in with. And this is what we tap into as our, you know, and we identify with as our purpose. So when I say develop your personal ethos, one way to look at that, if you believe in, you know, the Eastern traditions, is try to tap into your karma. What is your dharma, is what the Buddhists would say. What's your dharma? How are you how are you supposed to, what's the life energy and trajectory supposed to be? And most, you know, most people start to feel over time that there is a particular direction that they need to head and a uniqueness about them that is kind of informing them. But a lot of people don't take the time to really explore that and to figure that out. What the monks are doing is they're figuring that out. And if their dharma is to just be a monk, that's fine. But what they're doing through their meditation practice in the preparation for a transition to either another incarnation or what they call the bardo state, basically death, is part of that preparation is to burn off past karma, right, that could be holding them back from their own spiritual development, their own spiritual growth. So I think, you know, I believe a lot about, you know, I've been a student of yoga now and Zen and the martial arts since I was 21 and yoga since I was like 30 something. So a lot of those, a lot of that philosophy resonates with me. But I don't particularly say, you know, I'm preparing for my moment of death. What I say is I'm trying to fulfill my duty, my God-given gift. I want to, you know, gifts are meant to be both used and then given back, right? Mm-hmm. Paid forward. So I believe that we are here to both master ourselves and to serve powerfully. And I think that a lot of the spiritual traditions got that last part wrong. And so there's a lot of people who lock themselves up in monasteries who really needed to be out in the world serving. And some of the, you know, some of my teachers, like Paramahansa Yogananda is a great example, the author of Autobiography of Yogi, one of the most profound books you could ever read. He was literally kicked out of India and told, you need to go. You can't just sit here and meditate. You know, his teacher said, your dharma is to go teach the West, introduce yoga to the West. And he did. So really good teachers will not let their, you know, they'll ascertain whether a student really needs to be hanging out in a cave, if that's their dharma, or whether they need to go out and serve. And I think in this day and age, we need people to serve because, you know, the world's in a hurt locker right now, and we all need to help do our part to, you know, heal some of the environmental and potential negativity destruction that's happening around the world.
Hey, Mark, now with the amount of experience that you've got and on reflection, you know, the amount of physical training that you did when you were a SEAL and getting into that compared to teaching people now, how much of an importance is physicality compared to what we've just spoken about in terms of mindfulness, you're doing yoga now? If you could go back, would you do as much physical training?
Yeah, I wouldn't change any of that. I think the physical is absolutely critical, and it's a lifelong pursuit. And when I look at the models that I have for this are advanced martial artists who are, you know, fit as a fiddle when they're in their 90s or 100 years old, or yogis, same thing. Mm-hmm. They, you know, the physical body needs to be moved every day. And when you move your body, then your brain is healthier, your heart is healthier, and your whole gut is healthy. And those are the organs of your brain. You know, your gut has 500 million neurons, and your brain has hundreds of millions of neurons, or your brain, your heart brain. So your entire nervous system is healthier when your body is healthy.
Yeah.
And that means your brain is healthy. That means you're going to think better and your emotions are going to be, you know, the mind is essentially a combination of cognition and emotional awareness. And so by moving the body effectively and fueling it effectively and sleeping effectively or well, essentially what we're saying is your vessel is going to be a fit vessel for your mind to experience and to communicate in life. If you leave that behind, then your mind is not going to be working as optimally. And a lot of people don't get that. And I learned that through the SEALs. I've seen people transform themselves from kind of like slow, what you would call slow or even dumb, to be freaking PhD rock science, rock star people, just because of the way the SEALs train with your body, whole body, mind, system training. I don't think you could ever leave it behind. Now, physical movement and performance is critical. Having said that, like, do I do 2.5 hour to 3 hour operator workouts now at 54 years old? No, I train physically, you know, 45 minutes to an hour a day. Sometimes I just get my 200 burpees in. Next year I'm committing to 100,000 burpees.
Oh my God. Right? So much for your 100 burpee challenge, people listening. 100,000 burpees.
I'm doing 100,000 burpees next year to raise money for vets who are suffering from post-traumatic stress through a foundation I started called Courage Foundation. I'm going to ask people to either pledge or to join me. So movement is important. And I'm going to be 55 next year. I want to do 100,000 burpees when I'm 95. Yeah. You know, I think it's important to move your body. And when people stop moving, it's when they start declining.
Yeah. I love now, conversations. I
also
like
love
this.
Tai Chi and I love yoga. So I think those are really acceptable forms of movement. And you'll get a lot of the same benefits. But I just happen to like also I like the sweat fest because I was brought up as an athlete. So I really resonate with both the hard and the soft forms of movement.
Yeah, conversations like this for Tris and I are super valuable to hear. Like, we were talking to Frank Zane, and Frank's 74 years old, and he looks great, and he still teaches. Yeah. And we asked him a question, and we're like, Frank, at 74, you look amazing. You're still teaching. Some of your competitors in the late 70s, 60s aren't even around anymore. What was your secret? Right. And his secret, the first thing he said was yoga. He started doing yoga when he was in his 30s. And then,
awesome.
And then taking little small naps during nice. The day. And recovery. So is there an ask? I know you're doing the yoga. You look awesome. You said you're going to be 55. And is there any sort of recovery things that you add into your day that maybe we don't know about? Are you doing any sort of, like, do you get acupuncture, massages? Do you get in the float tank, anything like that?
I love massage. I try to get a massage every week. You know, sometimes I don't squeeze in, but I try to get a massage every week. I do yoga every day. Mm. I like to take naps, but, you know, so maybe 3-4 times a week I'll get the nap in. Especially in the weekends, you know, so there's a little catch up going on. Yep. I try, you know, like heck to get my 8 hours of sleep a night because that's incredible. You know, it's very important. I consider that for every hard workout I do, right? If I do an hour of hard workout, then I'm due 10 to 15 minutes of recovery. Mm. So it's not quite 20% of the time I spend working hard. I'll spend in recovery, and that's going to be breathing. So I have my practice of box breathing. I'll do 20 minutes of that a day in the morning, and then I'll do another 10 minutes after my workout. And the breathing, you know, 70% of our toxins are released through the breath. And when we can control our breath and slow it down and use it as a practice, has enormous benefits for recovery, right? All the benefits you get from a really good nap, you can get from 10 minutes of box breathing. So that's a big part of my my process. And then, you know, fueling. I just eat a lot less than most people eat. I'm very much in line with kind of the metabolic flexibility and ketogenic diet that Doug Domestino or Mark Sisson talk about. I've been eating that way for years, and it kind of becomes a natural I think when your body's really in tune, that's the way you naturally will start to eat. You know, you just start to veer away from sugar and you start to learn that fat is such a great source of fuel. And also your diet gets really regulated, so you just don't need as much food.
Yep.
And, you know, you start to – I stopped buying into the myth of needing 3 square meals a day a long time ago. So I usually eat 2 meals a day, a really late – late breakfast or early lunch, and then a dinner, and it's going to be, you know, tons of vegetables and fat and some protein, you know, not as much protein as people would think either. And then I intermittent fast, you know, so I have a feeding window from like 1 until 7, and then I don't eat anything, you know, after that. Sometimes I'll just blow that out of the water and pig out on pizza. Like once a week. That's the 80-20 rule, right?
Yeah.
Anyway, so, but the combination of that kind of fueling, getting tons of really good sleep, recovering really well after a hard workout, those I consider foundational, right? Getting out inside, you know, every once in a while I just go out and do my breathing outside and just sit in the sun, just soak up the rays. I walk barefoot. I live in Southern California. I'm walking barefoot all the time. Just feels really natural, right? And so all these things which sound like hacks to other people have just been kind of a natural way of life for me. I live on the ocean. You know, I get out there and do my Tai Chi in the morning, and I'm looking at the ocean. I'm breathing all that fresh air. And sometimes, you know, I have a plan to go in and catch a workout at my office, but I'll be sitting there just looking at it, and the ocean's going, Mark, come get in me. And so I'll just change everything and go down and get on my paddleboard or go for a swim, you know, and it's just rejuvenating. Anyways, I think variety is awesome when it comes to how you move, physical training, tons of variety. Like, I don't ever do the same workout twice. Spontaneity is good. You know, if you want to move your body and you know yoga and martial arts and stuff like that, then you don't need a class. Like, I think I haven't been to a yoga class or a martial arts class in years. I do have a private teacher for my Tai Chi and Qigong, but everything, you know, is spontaneous. The wisdom kind of flows from you when you allow it to, you know what I mean? So just spontaneous movement or dance is amazing because, again, just all that mindful movement, moving the breath, moving the body, and anybody listening to this can achieve optimal health just by doing those things every day, you know?
Yeah, right on. Some absolutely great advice.
Check this out. I haven't told anyone this because it's a little way off, but I think you guys appreciate that. You may even want to come, but New Year's, I think next New Year's, 2018 to 2019, we're going to be doing a 50-hour event in Germany with a good friend of mine who runs a program called Takatina. So it's going to be a combination of Kokoro Yoga and Takatina. And Reinhard Fleschold is the founder of Takatina. It's basically sound rhythm with sound, right, and movement. Can you imagine that combination?
Yeah.
And we're going to do like a 45-minute yoga sequence followed by, you know, an hour of Takatina, you know, followed by Shavasana, intense flow state, back up to yoga.
That sounds great.
And can you imagine 50 hours of just like breath, movement, mindfulness,
yeah,
spirit connection? That kind of stuff is amazing. When you do that type of work in a seminar, it can be very inspiring, but also it can really unlock a lot of insights and you know, different patterns.
I think for like a lot of us, we wait until we get sick or our bodies start failing to get better, and everyone wants to find some sort of like pill or go to a Western doctor. But you're talking about like movement of the body they've been doing for thousands of years. Like the whirling dervish do it through dance.
Yeah,
and they meditate through those. It's a beautiful thing to watch, and thank you for offering that to us. We'll definitely keep
your
that.
Your body it knows how to achieve optimal health through movement, fueling, and recovery. And I haven't been sick in years, and knock on wood, you know, we'll keep it this way.
Yeah, man, for sure.
It's all about balance.
Yes, sir. What's the one saying? Everything in moderation, including moderation.
Including moderation, I love that.
You need it.
For sure. Mark, really appreciate you coming on the show today. The conversation's been next level, so thank you for coming on. Before we let you leave, we want everyone following what you're doing online. So everyone, you can check out Mark's work at www.unbeatablemind.com. You can also find him at www.sealfit.com. And they've got a Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter channel. And of course, definitely listen to his podcast in the same name, Unbeatable Mind. He's got some brilliant guests on there. And he also gives some great advice as he's done today.
Mark, man, thanks a lot so much for doing this with us. TK and I could sit with you for hours. This is obviously an awesome experience. You've given us a lot of momentum to get our day started on the right foot, so thank you.
Yeah, thank you, guys. It's been a real pleasure.
Excellent.
And we are out of your tribe. Look forward to training with some more Aussies.
Johnny, that was Mark Devine, man.
What a versatile, like, I don't know the right adjectives to describe Mark, but, you know, what he gave us and the stories and pictures he painted from his path to what he's doing now, and then how, you know, one person on paper might think of a Navy SEAL as one way or somebody who just goes to war.
Yeah.
And then you hear Mark tell his story, and it's very powerful.
Yeah.
It's like the,
I agree, man.
The alpha and omega, you know, the dichotomy of life, the up and down, the happy, the sad. It's about finding that balance.
Yeah, we've had some brilliant guests on this year. Obviously, we're very fortunate for people giving us their time. And that would have to be in my top three conversations that I've had this year. It made me feel really good. Sometimes it's, I don't know, sometimes because of the fitness route, I already know a lot about the fitness route.
You do know a lot.
But this route here, I don't know, I don't really know too much about a lot of the stuff that Mark does. So it's like really intriguing when you actually, it's kind of like our own private tuition that we just got, because which we will share now with everyone listening.
Yeah.
But for that hour that we had with Mark, it's like I didn't know about any of that stuff, so I actually learned stuff that I can kind of think now about. As we talked about at the start of the show, I'm into gratitude now. I can kind of think about other things that I want to kind of do,
for sure. And like in my notes, I wrote down corporal, you know, the heart and mind, which he mentioned, and then I put in my calendar to practice the breathing techniques, because it's something that I've been drawn into. I just haven't chosen to implement that into my daily calendar.
But like you said, the fitness thing, like think about we episode 6 or 7, we had like a personal trainer on. And now last week we had a PhD in nutritional sciences. So I think that is a perfect explanation of us going, starting something and then wanting more and wanting more. We went from a personal trainer, right? This guy then has an online business and now we're in the PhDs. Mm. Now with Mark, we go from, you know, let's talk to the writer. All right, now let's talk to the writer who actually wrote about the time he spent. All right, now let's talk to the writer who wrote about the time he spent, who's teaching those other people, that sort of thing. And it's the vision board, man. It's an attribute to our growth and then our understanding that we have so many holes in our game. We will never be perfect, and there will always be room for us to grow and learn. And it's by reaching out to gentlemen like Mark and then him having the kindness to sit down with us and share these stories.
Yeah, couldn't agree more. I think we're in just total
sync
today because, yeah, I think we both see what we see, and Mark's just a very genuine person. You know, sometimes people just tell you what you want to hear. Yes. I don't think I didn't get that from Mark. I just got a situation where he wanted us, he could tell we were willing to learn.
Yeah.
And like, yeah, I don't know. It was just something different in today's conversation. It's just maybe he's older than us by 20 years and he's got a lot more wisdom, and he can see that maybe he sees himself in our shoes, and maybe a little bit of guidance maybe, because that's what I got out of it today. I got just guided in a good path, and I just took so much away from that, man.
And it's like we had, you know, Maxwell on, who's 10 years older than Divine, but totally different. You know, Steve came from this, his approach is way different. You know, it's a little bit more kind of my way or the highway aspect, and it's a little bit more critical of other people's methodologies of coaching. But with Mark, it's almost like, this is who I am. This is what has worked for me to get me to where I am. I will put it out there. I know it's not going to be for the general population, but the people it's for, who resonate to it, who listen, who do it, it's going to have magical and powerful effects on them. And I think that's part of his message, and it's probably why we both collectively feel that it was very important for us to sit through that.
Yeah, that's a good point. Like, he doesn't bring up any other people. I think he's so concentrated on what he's doing.
Yeah.
He doesn't have to focus on any other people. His focus is on, he knows there's a group of people that need his help.
Yeah, and it's a small group.
Yeah, his true focus is on that and becoming really good at delivering that. I think that's where his strength lies.
Yeah, I'm going to go, when we go back and do our edits and re-listen to it, you know, he mentioned, I forget because we're in the moment, but he talked about the 5 pillars. He had his own words for it. He wasn't regurgitating somebody else's concept. I mean, conceptually, it's you know, written in stone, those sort of things, but...
Yeah, he got the 5 things from somewhere, but he's put all together to make it his own situation.
How about the story of, like, I could just picture that Southern California neighborhood with these these groups.
It sounds beautiful, doesn't it?
No, but running through the neighborhood early on in his...
Oh, I thought you meant at the end when he was talking about going out, you just barefoot and just...
Yeah.
But same thing, yeah.
Yeah, imagine you wake up on your cul-de-sac neighborhood and you see in your neighbor Mark has 30 savages...
Carrying logs.
Carrying logs. It's pretty cool, man. But,
I don't carry a log. I want to carry a log now.
Yeah, I was kind of disheartened because a year ago you and I were getting ready to sit down with, it might have been Steve Weatherford, probably wrong on that, but the American football team that was making their 14-year-olds carry logs, and the poor bloke, he ended up getting killed from it. Do you remember that?
It was
in New Jersey. It was either Zach Evanesh, but yeah, so... Definitely, if you're not prepared, or you don't have an expert like Mark Divine, don't just go out
and carry logs.
Yeah, because it can be dangerous, and it takes an expert and a guided mentor like Divine to get you through those little circumstances.
That's true.
There's a metaphor.
For sure.
Think about the log. I mean, it's a physical carrying of the log, but how many of us choose to just drop that shit in life when things get too heavy?
Yeah, that's probably true. Very true, man. Mm. All right, guys, really appreciate you tuning in this year. I think this is going to be our last show for the year.
Oh.
So, Johnny, Merry Christmas, Happy New Year to you, man.
Happy holidays to you, Tristan Cannell, and everyone listening. Just, you know, treat the people that's close to you, you know, with love. Tell people you care about them. I just had one of my closest friends, who's like a brother to me, send me photos yesterday of him and his wife and his 2 young children got T-boned in an intersection in Ohio. Yeah. They all lived, and they're all okay, but the pictures themselves, it really got me emotional and really horrific, and I'm just blessed that they were able to survive that. Mm. And, you know, the message is clear that you never know when something out of your control is going to take you from this space. So never undervalue the communication you have with your loved ones, telling them that you care about them.
Definitely. That's a good way for us to end the year. So, again, a big shout-out to everyone tuning in. You know, we couldn't do the show if you didn't listen to the show. So, we appreciate it. Look after, like Johnny said, look after the family and friends in your life. And, like you said, tell them that you love them.
Yeah, man. It's very important, guys. Thank you.
All right, guys. That's it for this year. We will check you next week.
That's crazy. 2018. Do you want to say? There's a guest that you've been and we've been working on bringing to the show for a while. You know, January.
No, we've mentioned it.
Oh, did we already mention it?
Yeah, we mentioned that.
I'm fanboying
right
now.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. I can't wait for it. But, yeah, tune in soon. Tell your family and friends. We're bringing some great guests next year.
Yep.
Any guest requests, yeah, send them
through.
It'll be fantastic. All right, guys. We'll chat soon.
Welcome to the Vision Board Podcast. Stories of success from around the world.
You guys are scratching an itch, and that's why this podcast has become popular and successful is because you guys are scratching an itch. You're enjoying it, and you're also benefiting from the knowledge that people are dropping.
I've never met the person in my life, including my parents, that was able to outwill me about me.
Whatever profession you're in, you need to keep working hard at it. You know, nothing comes easy these days, and you know, you'll get knocked down, but get back up, that counts, so just keep working hard at it.
You know, you guys said you do stuff, you ask things that aren't Googleable. You guys are two for two.
There's never been a time in my life where anybody ever was able to tell me who I was more than I knew who I was.
To join our vision and follow the journey, please subscribe to the Vision Board Podcast via iTunes, SoundCloud, and Stitcher.